Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's a minute past the hour on this, the fifth day of July, 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and participate in the real-time multimedia media merriment that is The Horn chat room. You'll be in the delightful company of Anatole, Jug of Punch, Labor Man, Little Gray, Steve from Georgistan, Trey, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, but yet a third-stage guild navigator with damned good sense, has not folded space to become man cave. You will also be joined by occasional, once-in-a-while, part-time, chat room moderator Texas Betsy. And more will be there as well. I don't know what Moore's first name is. Maybe it's Thomas or Mary Tyler. But Moore will be there during the course of the program. That's a prediction I have. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. The Horn is coming through 5x5 on my 1946 Manchester small-scale experimental machine, Brother Bob. Thank you. That's a big damn garage you've got to house your 1946 Manchester small-scale experimental machine, Brother Deacon Asa. I commend you. And yeah, hopefully loud and clear. Yes. So it's Titanic Tuesday, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, if you want to help keep the program going, we keep the program going not by selling ads for anybody who wants you to buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. Buy high and sell low because you're a rube. No, we don't have any of those ads. We don't have any ads for Bose Wave radios that you can listen to as you lay on your mail order mattress made of foam designed by NASA and designed by renegade Swedes. We don't have ads for that either, and while you're laying there, you won't be picking up any bowling balls with your auric vacuum cleaner or waiting for your hair to grow back with your herbal hair regrowth remedy. I'm sorry. Sorry, sorry, sorry. We don't have ads for any of those things. We won't be breaking up the program to run 4.5 minutes of ads while... No, it ain't going to happen. Because we rely on listener contributions. And in the grand scheme of things, we don't seek a lot of listener contributions. The fact of the matter is, we try to raise $200 an evening. This particular evening being the fifth day of July, we need to raise $340. So to catch up and keep on right, you get the idea. 10 at 34, 34 at 10, 1 at 340. 340 at 1. I don't think you can really do that with PayPal, can you? Well, never mind. That's the whole idea, you know, 2 at 170, 4 at 85, 8 at 4250, and onward thusly. If you want to help out, of course, the PayPal button is over at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com under the tab Contribute. You fill out the form. If you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, you would be welcomed into the merry little band, and welcome indeed as one of those who, you know, because you know, I think at $10 a month it works out to like less than 17 cents an hour of programming. So that's not. It's pretty cheap, really, when you get right down to it. But you just click the box that says make this a recurring monthly donation and go from there. Otherwise, just fill out all the fields except for the ones that, ask you what you do and where you do it, because we don't care, and just get to the next screen. For those of you who prefer to use the United States Postal Service, well, the mailing address for checks and money orders made payable to The Horn is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And remember, if you want to use the U.S. mail, just send me a note so I can give Boss Man Wayne the happy news that there's going to be something in the mailbox there, and he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck and take nothing with him except maybe his tire iron in case he runs into a member of the Klan. Because remember, the United Parcel Service, UPS, where our little mailbox is, also does business with a domestic terrorist organization called the Ku Klux Klan, whose box is also in that same facility. And, well, you know how it is with Klansmen. You never want to be around one if you don't have a tire iron or a... Right, exactly. So that's... I think that's all the preliminaries. It is, as noted, it is the that time of the week that we call Titanic Tuesday, so named for that morning, once upon a time, long, long ago now, when the right-wing blatherer over in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, took a call from one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers, mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, I don't know, who said, Steve, how come you reckon it is that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We don't live nowhere near the beach. And he said, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yes. No word, still no word on the movement of the Titanic onion blossom chopper. No, none whatsoever. Big table full of stuff. Yeah. So this is a celebration of just sort of full steam ahead right wing stupidity. And you know, sometimes other people find their way into, you know, Titanic Tuesday. Other people. Okay, so it's 8 minutes past 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. And we're gonna have to talk about this, aren't we? I mean, sure, why not? Everybody else is. Everybody else has. By 6 p.m., this topic has probably had to... It's like velvet that's had all the velvetiness rubbed right off of it, and it's just practically shiny cotton now. I'm talking, of course, about the announcement by the FBI today that they won't be pursuing any criminal charges against, you know, Hillary Clinton. Not to say I told you so, but, you know, I told you so. There was no there. There wasn't. There just wasn't. Well, I mean, there wasn't any there from the standpoint of overt, indictable criminal activity. There wasn't any felonious conduct there. No matter how badly some people wanted it, my God, the right wing, and this sort of doubles back onto our conversation about Loretta Lynch yesterday. To wit, she said, well, I'm abdicating my responsibilities. I'll just do whatever the FBI says. Which is okay, but you don't say that. Because when you say that, it makes it look like you have, in fact, abdicated your responsibility as the chief law enforcement officer of the United States of America. So out of this, Hillary doesn't get an indictment. Bill just, keeps bubba-ing along. And Loretta Lynch, well, her reputation is in tatters, which is a damn shame, as damn shames go. Lottie in the chat room said, Hillary is as pure as the driven snow, 99.44% pure. She floats! Yes. So there it is. Can we please just sort of get on with it now? I mean, I know people are disgusted. Especially the Oh, God, Lottie. I'm sorry, this is a very visual thing. In the chat room. I needed that. The bumper sticker. Giant Meteor 2016. Just ended already. Woo! What really makes it is the goddamn fireball that dots the eye. Oh, I want one. Because that's kind of where we are. My God. And I haven't checked to see if I got unfriended or delisted or anything like that, but because I tweeted out earlier and it probably wound up on my Facebook page. I don't care if she emailed our nuclear launch codes to Ayatollah Ahmadinejad. I'm voting for her because Trump. Any random thin-skinned boomer hilarian anywhere. Oh, yeah, absolutely. How can I not? A really long one, a long ring of the cowbell for Lottie, who says he got it from Devin. And it really does. That has Devin written all over it. Oh, it's a good thing Agnes isn't in here. She'd still be laughing. How do I put this? By the way, I had a note from Les. Earlier today, and Les has been listening for a very, very, very long time up in Massachusetts. less suggested that I might want to check out yesterday's episode of The Savage Wiener.
Savage!
He said, this morning, listening to the Monday podcast and your bit about Bill Clinton enjoying a perturbed Hillary made me LOL. I notice I can rather easily make people laugh, but seldom do others make me laugh. As nutty as it sounds, the Friday Savage Nation on YouTube, methinks of some interest to you. If you can stomach such tainted food, I can't. I'll take your word for this. I'll take your word for this, Les. Why? Savage predicts that once this election cycle is over, giant meteor 2016 just ended already, he predicts people will quickly shut down on political talk radio. Trump 9, Hillary 9. I don't care. Say it out loud, Russian. And maybe time to, maybe time to learn a foreign language in the car. My words. Wiener says only talk radio survivors will be the Gene Shepard, not his words, of course, type that can weave stories, his words. Perhaps Shep can be a new training manual, food for thought. Not that I think you need to tell stories like Shep's Swamp Ice with wild music, but the Wiener seems to think so. And if that's what the Savage Wiener said, well, he couldn't be more wrong. 4 years of Hillary Clinton in the White House is going to be the best thing that has happened to right-wing radio since the election of Barack Obama, which was the best thing that had happened to right-wing radio since the election of Bill Clinton. Because it'll just be one long conniption. Meanwhile, my remembering the story of Ashcroft out of his mind in the hospital and them trying to pressure him while he was whacked out of his mind on heavy-duty opioids relative to the Loretta Lynch thing, our buddy Scott in Sweden said, here's the first thing I thought of when I saw the Loretta Lynch story and sent me a link. Trip with Cheney puts ethics spotlight on Scalia. Vice President Dick Cheney and Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia spent part of last week duck hunting together at a private camp in southern Louisiana just weeks after the court agreed to take up the vice president's appeal in lawsuits over his handling of the administration's energy task force. While Scalia and Cheney are avid hunters and longtime friends, several experts in legal ethics questioned the timing of their trip and said it raised doubts about Scalia's ability to judge the case impartially. But Scalia rejected their concern Friday, saying, I do not think my impartiality could reasonably be questioned. Yeah, that too. That too. But to sort of get back to where I was with this presidential election, how much more perfect could this get for Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton? She has an opponent, quite possibly the only opponent she could have, who is so godforsaken odious that even though the FBI said of her decision to use her own little server with, you know, the 30-day trial of McAfee antivirus, to use her own little server and to send out stuff willy-nilly via unsecure email. Of the whole mess, FBI Director James Comey said that it was, and these are his words, not mine, and since they are his words, they are therefore the words, the formal declaration of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I almost said Federal Bureau of Exoneration. Never mind. In his words, her conduct was extremely careless. Extremely careless. Now, we're not talking about some candidate for alderman in Donut Center. It's a hole. We're talking about a candidate for the. We're talking about, you know, the leading candidate for the presidency of the United States. Extremely careless. You know, just kind of let that rattle around a little bit. Extremely careless. Yeah, I know. VT Blom in the chat room said, but Bob, her free McAfee came with her free new AOL discs. So, I mean, it's perfect. It's perfect. If extremely careless had been hung about the neck of just about any other presidential candidate, God knows, especially a Democrat, the campaign would be over. If it had been pasted on Barack Obama in 2008, we would now be talking about the presidential campaign and likely election of Vice President Sarah Palin to the presidency of the United States, assuming she didn't quit halfway through. Am I wrong? I mean, the campaign of a very, very capable Gary Hart came apart once because he was seen with an attractive woman sitting on his lap aboard a boat called the Monkey Business. Oh, some of us are actually old enough to remember all that. The president, Bill Clinton, was impeached after saying, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. Edmund Muskie was run out of the presidential primaries of the Democratic Party in 1972 because he shed a tear. Yeah, how many more of these examples do we need? But because all the serious Republican candidates who could have given her a serious run for her money and probably a righteous thumping in November were run out of the race by one Donald J. Trump, millionaire. I own a mansion and a yacht. The path is pretty much clear for Hillary Clinton to become president of the United States. I'm with her! And the fact of the matter is, shit, I'm voting for her. Ah! And maybe I'll be glad I did. Maybe I will be proven so wrong. She will be the second coming of FDR. Maybe she'll be the promise that JFK was never able to fulfill. And I will be so happy. So happy. Why am I suddenly reminded of a drugged up princess as played by Audrey Hepburn in Roman Holiday saying, "So happy, so happy. I'll be so happy that I was so wrong." But this is the damnedest thing that I've ever seen. This whole campaign. I'm not that good at the Twitters. Is because Trump a hashtag, trending hashtag yet? If it isn't, why isn't it? And has Trump abandoned hashtag crooked Hillary and picked up the one that really stings yet? Hashtag extremely careless Hillary? I mean, we're talking about the presidency of the United States. I'm gonna have to ask Dr. Bill, because he's the best historian I've ever known. Are there any presidents throughout the history of the United States, starting with Washington, who have been described as extremely careless? Now to be fair, Washington was criticized repeatedly as being a not very good general. And history does, in fact, bear that out. But as president, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, you know, had he actually been elected president, maybe Burr would have been described as extremely careless. Madison. Nobody ever described little Jemmy Madison as extremely careless. They may have described him as extremely little, because he was, but not extremely careless. Jackson. Genocidal maniac. Absolutely. Extremely careless? No. Martin Van Buren. Extremely careless? No. James K. Polk. No. James Buchanan. Sometimes described as quite possibly our first gay president, but never described as extremely careless. Lincoln, Andrew Johnson. Scuttled and screwed up the attempt at Reconstruction after Lincoln's murder. Impeached. Came within an at's ass of being removed from office. Was never described as extremely careless. Ulysses Grant. Up until the presidency of Warren G. Harding, the president with the single most politically corrupt administration in the history of the United States, was never described as extremely careless. There's a lot to respect in Grant personally. The man was dying of cancer as he sat and wrote his memoirs. And so respectful of him was Samuel Clemens that he took it upon himself to publish those memoirs, did so via subscription. So that Grant's family would not be left in poverty. James Garfield had hopes of making Reconstruction and civil rights for freed slaves a reality. Got murdered by an idiot with a gun. Never described as extremely careless. Rutherford B. Hayes and all those forgettables. McKinley. No. Theodore Roosevelt. Racist. Imperialist. Never described as extremely careless. William Howard Taft, who replaced him, was never described as extremely careless. He might have been described as extremely large. You might recall the requirement of the oversized bathtub at the White House for William Howard Taft, but was never called extremely careless. Woodrow Wilson, former president of Princeton University, perhaps a bit of an idealist, you know, the whole make the world safe for democracy thing, perhaps a bit of a liar, he kept us out of war and then got us into World War I, but he did not do so extremely carelessly. Warren G. Harding. Philanderer. Former small town newspaper editor. Ink stained wretch. Corrupt as the day is long. Was never described as extremely careless. Died in office. Followed up by silent Calvin Coolidge, who gave us the phrase, "The business of America is business," which really, really, really should be on the money instead of "In God We Trust." Gave the markets their head and celebrated through the glory days of the Roaring Twenties. Partied aboard what they didn't know then, but some suspected, was the giant sinking ship of the American economy, was never referred to as extremely careless. Say whatever else you want about Herbert Hoover, he was an extremely capable bureaucrat, racist as hell. I mean, you know, Merca. Was never described as extremely careless. FDR, come on. Truman, no. Eisenhower, uh-uh. John Kennedy, no way. LBJ was the ultimate political fixer in the United States Senate. No. Richard M. Nixon, full-on crook. The guy who put Hillary's pal Henry Kissinger on the road to global political stardom. He was crooked. It was so crooked they had to screw him into the dirt when he died. But nobody ever said he was extremely careless. Jimmy Carter was so caring that when he simply tried to talk straight to the American people, the for-profit media dubbed it a malaise speech. Reagan, the ultimate caretaker presidency. Ketchup is a vegetable. Nobody ever hung extremely careless on him. Pappy Bush. Huh? Bill Clinton. Nope. The man was known for staying up until 4 o'clock in the morning digesting policy papers and documents and tremendous, powerful mind. No one ever called him extremely careless. At last. We're there. Dim leader. A man who, as Queen of the Minions Carol Baker points out, deleted 22 million emails. Nobody, call him a lot of things. But even him, nobody ever called him extremely careless. Count Dicula, who was the real president those 8 years. Call him bloodthirsty. Call him a warmonger. Call him for 8 years, the incarnation upon planet Earth of Satan himself. But nobody can hang extremely careless on Count Dicula. And we know nobody called extremely careless would tank the presidential ambitions of any other ordinary political candidate. But not this time. Because Trump. Do you realize, and of course you do, what extremely careless would have done to her campaign if she had been running against John Kasich? Not that I'm a John Kasich fan. Kasuck. I mean, we had the numbers before he couldn't get anybody to take his candidacy seriously. The Republicans wouldn't take his candidacy seriously because they wanted to make America great again. But there was the polling data right there that he flat out whipped Hillary every time they asked, polling wise. Well, how strange. The stream's gone. I'm still sending. Extremely Careless would have tanked Hillary's campaign if she were running against Jeb Bush. Extremely Careless would have destroyed her campaign if she were running against little Marco Rubio. Extremely Careless would have maybe even made America think twice about that god-awful monstrosity, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time. But not Trump. And I just can't forget that phone call that has been reported in which Trump called Bill Clinton to ask if Bill Clinton thought he should run for president, and Bill said, "I think that'd be a great idea, Donald." So I don't know what to think. I don't like feeling like I feel. Because what I feel like is that I'm watching something that is entirely fake. I feel like I'm watching wrestling, where the outcome has been predetermined in rehearsal. This couldn't be any more perfect. I don't know. Maybe the thin-skinned Boomer Hilarians will say that it's just God's will. My God Almighty, can you imagine? Can you imagine how the DNC would be squealing with glee and touting it far and wide across the countryside? If, say, 4 years ago, Mitt Romney had been declared by the FBI to be extremely careless. You know what's interesting? In FBI speak, extremely careless is a really, really polite way of saying stupid. And that's the problem, isn't it? We are constantly told how intelligent Hillary Clinton is. How she's what's the phrase they like to use? The most capable person ever to run for president. If extremely careless is the descriptor for the person who is the most capable person ever to run for president,
What does that say? What does that mean?
What it means is Giant Meteor 2016. Enough already. Just end it. So, you know, you're welcome to share your thoughts if you want once we get the program back up and running, because I wanted to just finish out the ideas. And sort of get this out of the way. I'm going to take a break here and see if I can... I've already texted Ben Birch at White Rose Society to see what's up. Talk amongst yourselves. If you're listening to the podcast, you won't notice anything at all because I'm going to stop the recording and then restart it. Oh, this is frustrating. And isn't it interesting that this thing craps out, that the streamer crapped out, as I was talking about this topic. I'm sure there's absolutely no connection whatsoever. Hi, Agent Fred. With her, are you? And again, lest I get another email, Bob, you know, but because Trump. Yeah, I know. I'm voting for her, too. At one point in time, I was content saying, well, you know, I'll put a bag over my head, a clothespin on my nose, and duct tape over my mouth, but I can't do the duct tape now because I'm going to have to take a bucket into the goddamn booth with me to vomit in while I vote for her. Extremely careless. You know what? It fits. It has transferability. Extremely careless is a phrase you could use in, say, describing her vote to let Dick and Dub slaughter a million civilian innocents in Iraq and open up the giant nightmarish can of hell worms that region has become in the aftermath of Georgia's war of choice. Extremely careless. Extremely careless. Turning a blind eye to a coup in Honduras that has wound up in death squads wandering the land. Right-wing death squads. Seldom do we back countries that have left-wing death squads. Right? Extremely careless, advocating for war in us participating in war in Libya that has, of course, opened up another can of hell worms there. Extremely careless. Well, if nothing else, you know that stings like hell. She's not extremely careless. She's the most capable person ever to run for the presidency in the history of America, damn it. So it turns out now that what she described in hard choices, well, you know, when she makes those hard choices, she tends to be extremely careless in the process. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. But I still have love left for this country. And a teeny tiny little itsy bitsy dab of hope.
And this business just takes it out behind the barn and kicks it with steel-toed boots. Again, I've been a Democrat all my life, and I'm not going to stop being one. But this really smarts. I want a candidate that I can get behind. I want a candidate that I can root for. Well, little froggies want wings, so they won't bump their little green butts when they hop. So we'll take a break, and I'm going to extremely carefully try to find out if I can get the stream back working. Okay? Okay. Stand by. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah, so apparently it works again. I was told that... I was told that we had gone to silence on the White Rose stream instead of, you know, server does not exist or 404 not found or whatever. And so once that meant we were back, or I presume that means we were back. Let me check here. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. That 1946 Manchester small-scale experimental machine is a humdinger. Almost zero latency. So, yeah, I think it's back. Thank you very kindly, Sparky in the chat room. You're back, Bob. Yay! It's a miracle from the Lord. God be praised. Yeah. And there was much rejoicing. Yay. So this is still, I shouldn't, for people listening to the podcast, why does he keep talking about still? It's only been a minute or so. It's like time travel, isn't it? It's only gone for a second or so. We're back. And we're back. For Titanic Tuesday, no less. And, well, that was, you know, the filibobster was mostly pretty much nothing but extremely careless. Ron in the unflooded north asking, are you yelling yet and throwing around Anglo-Saxon action verbs? No, that was earlier. No, I ate my feelings. I gobbled down several chocolate chip cookies. Chocolate helps. At least in the absence of tequila. Or brown liquor at this point. Or stump liquor at this point. You get the idea. But it's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and being as it is now 8 minutes past 7 p.m., I should maybe make mention of the fact that, the lines are open if you want to join in the conversation. Conversation's kind of the heart and soul of this whole process. The numbers? Why, interesting you should ask. 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-4676. We call that the stress line. Named in honor and memory of Bill Mr. Stress Miller. And from anywhere on the planet, you can jump right into the conversation with Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. And that'll get you in, too. Easy, easy, easy. I guess Ben must have gotten my messages. I didn't hear anything back from him, but he must have gotten the bat signal. Because something made the stream server work again. Now, let's not be paranoid, Thomas. Did a Hilarion hack you? You're back live on FYINation.com. Good, 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 good. I don't know, but it does seem kind of interesting how we crashed because of the, you know, because of the topic at hand. And I mean, what do you do with this extremely careless business? And how do you translate that, extremely careless? What else does it mean? Incompetent? Whose idea was it? Who gave her the advice, or was it her, or was it her idea? I'm kind of at a loss. Let's run over to the Skype line and talk to Texas Betsy. Hey, Betsy. Oh, Betsy. Betsy. I'm listening to me.
And how do you translate?
No, I'm not. Oh, now we have sound effects. Oh, Betsy.
Oh, hey, sorry. I was messing with the speaker.
Oh, I was going to say, did you unintentionally dial? Is this a call you didn't want to make?
No, I dialed, and then I was messing with the speaker because I thought it would take you a minute to answer. Sorry, done.
Was that the last one of those?
That's the last one, I promise.
Okay, goody.
So I was actually calling to not talk about Hillary, if that's okay.
Oh, yeah, that's, believe you me, that is so fine.
Okay. So I took a field trip last week.
Yay, field trip.
Yay, no kids. Me and a paralegal from an immigration law office and a professor and a pastor from a church. And we all went to South Texas down in the Rio Grande Valley to talk, to speak and to be present at a county commissioner's meeting where they are trying to open yet another detention center. Although this one's not called a detention center because the courts told them they're not allowed to have detention centers anymore.
Being Texas, they didn't opt for the next best thing and call it concentration camp, did they?
They did not. They called it a residential something or other. But I have to tell you, it was one of the scariest groups of people I've ever seen in this, all crowded into this little courtroom in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Dimmitt County.
Okay, so let me clarify real quick. Who were scary, the immigrants or the people who were seeking to not detain them?
I love immigrants. No, the people who didn't want them there, and the people who wanted them there, the whole process, the whole, everybody who spoke except for two people was coming from a place of absolute fear and talking about what happens if these people escape and what will it do to our schools for those children to sit next to our children. And about a third of the people giving testimony of that ilk were people of a darker pigment themselves. Hispanic people who either wanted to slam the door shut behind them or were just anti-immigrant. It was so scary. They kept thinking that they were going to get Syrians and that this was like the scariest thing on earth. And to compare that to the neighborhood where I live, where everybody keeps asking why our refugee program doesn't have Syrians and can't we help Syrians? I'm like, the Syrians are in Dallas. You can't help the Syrians. Help the kids from Afghanistan or Iraq or Congo, because that's who's sitting in front of us.
So just so we can get a proper picture, this was a room full of white folks, wasn't it?
It was white folks and Hispanic folks. I would say two-thirds white.
Wait. When you say Hispanic folks, you mean people of maybe Mexican origin who've been here for a while, or I mean,
yes, either people who whose parents or grandparents or great grandparents either were from Mexico or have been in Texas so long that they've been here since before we were state.
So, in other words, been here long enough to let the classic typical American hate and paranoia get down into the genetic substructure.
Honestly, if I had to guess the percentage of Fox viewers in that crowd, I would guess somewhere around 95%. It was just scary, Bob.
And were y'all there merely to observe or to speak?
No, we were there to speak. We, the four of us in my car, all lined up three or four people apart from each other.
And the response, of course, was, well, y'all don't have to live here with them.
Well, the commissioner, after saying at the beginning that he was going to allow every single person to speak, no matter how long it took, somewhere around 12:15, decided he was hungry and that he'd heard enough to simply vote against it. And honestly, the only convincing arguments that anyone made to go against it that were not, were afraid they might escape, the only actual persuasive things had to do with water, wastewater, and the electrical grid.
Okay, so just out of curiosity, just to get a little bit more in the way of foundational stuff, is this a for-profit complex?
Yes, CCA.
Oh, of course. So CCA is, even though they're the prison industrial complex, they're not in the business of having detention centers.
Yeah, they are. They have two others.
They're just not allowed to call this one that.
Right. We're no longer allowed to call any of them detention centers.
Okay, so just to, again, in search of further clarity, who is it that's going to not be detained?
Primarily Central Americans who are not illegal but have requested asylum at the border. That's a, if you compare it to the other two in South Texas, that's 75% to 80% of the prisoners. And the other 20% are undocumented who were caught on entry. Usually they're booted out before they can even get this far. But people who were caught without papers having committed a minor offense, like a traffic violation.
And so does that also apply to the people in question here?
Yeah, presumably. Presumably it's just overflow from the places that currently exist.
In other words, ruthless, remorseless double parkers.
That's less than 20%, maybe 25%. Everyone else are asylum seekers from Central America waiting for their claims to be heard.
And what within the process, what happens if an asylum claim is turned down?
Most of them are immediately deported unless their lawyer has some appeals process or there's an extenuating circumstance. So there's actually two women in Austin and one child who've taken sanctuary in churches.
And do you have any kind of numbers on the odds of success on an asylum claim?
It really depends on the lawyer.
Wait, what? Because I was expecting you to say it really just depends on the circumstances.
No, it depends on the lawyer or the judge. There are some judges who, if there's any discrepancy, like she says that she was raped three times a week and then later in the same testimony says, well, that particular week she was raped twice. oh, she's a liar, and, you know, deport her.
Maybe we can send her back and she can be raped enough to figure out how to count.
Pretty much.
God almighty.
Yeah, it's really a scary thing.
And total number of people we're talking about?
Thousands. They're talking about the new facility being for 1,500 because the one that's, I don't know, 40, 50 miles away is at capacity at 2,000.
And the people in this county would rather they simply be lined up against a wall and what, shot?
Pretty much. I have to tell you, I've lived.
Before we go on, I mean that was a flippant comment, but you answered in the affirmative, so we're going to let that. How about a breakdown? Children versus adults, women versus men.
Virtually no men at the South Texas one. I think there are men in San Antonio. There are almost no cases where families are together. If the family includes a father and a mother, they're not together.
So is that because one hasn't been caught yet?
No, mother and children are in one facility. Father is in another facility.
Is it all right if my moral sense is in a complete stage of having gone to 11 on the outrage meter?
Yes. That's part of why I called you.
I generally prefer not to, you know, do the screaming stuff while I'm actually on a call.
Right. Well, there's just, I feel like I do some of this stuff for a living. And there's a ton of stuff that I'm just learning this summer, which means that most of the population doesn't know these places exist at all.
Okay, so I kind of smart-assedly said, use the phrase concentration camp.
That's kind of what they are. There's no gas chambers.
Let's talk a minute semantically, definitionally. A concentration camp is a place where people of one particular type are gathered together and imprisoned.
Yes.
Does that definition fit this circumstance?
Yes. With no charge of a crime.
Here's the next question. What happens if someone who is at one of these not detaining detention centers tries to walk away?
Well, that's one of the questions that we talked about. There are, one of the things they said, the reason that this new one wouldn't be a detention center is that the weapons of the guards wouldn't be visible to children.
Now stop that.
I'm telling you 100%. That's part of their definitional, this is not a detention center because.
Because the children can't see the guns.
Right. They also told us.
But the guns are there.
Right. They also told
us. And they're at the ready.
Yes.
And they've got real bullets in them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not, it's not like the, it's not like Checkpoint Charlie in between East and West Berlin where, you know, our soldiers had their ammunition, you know, wrapped up in packages and, you know, couldn't possibly get a bullet into the gun, or at least that's the way it was described to me. The bullets are in the guns. The guns are completely functional. Hey, what kind of guns?
That I don't know.
I'll bet you they're not air rifles.
They're not tasers either.
And they're not the shotguns that shoot beanbags, are they?
One would think not.
And so were there any numbers given on it? Are the people trying to be really sane about this? Are the people who have the guns that have bullets in them that are ready at a moment's notice to be used against people who haven't committed any crime whatsoever?
are they carried by people who are guards?
Yes.
Are the guards members of the United States military or the Border Patrol?
No, they're CCA guards.
Right. So the guards are merely corporate employees of Corrections Corporation of America.
For $9 an hour or something. I just sent you a link. With, like, facts and figures.
Son of a gun.
Yeah. So,
And again, just so people know, and it's not a secret, I guess, but people need to know where this concentration camp is. What county?
The one they're not building is in Dimmitt. The ones that exist, one is in Dillon and one is in San Antonio. And then there's one a little bit east of here. They are never near large cities. They are kind of hidden out in the middle of nowhere.
And so what's the county seat of Dimmitt, which is curiously close to Dammit?
I was there. Let me look.
And this was a Texas Commissioner's Court hearing?
This was a County Commissioner's Court hearing.
Yeah, and in Texas, all those folks are referred to as judges, right?
Yes.
County Court judges. So Corrections Corporation of America owns this, but is it operated in the it's operated under the aegis of the Department of Homeland Security?
Yes. So I have lived in Austin for 18 years. I believe in 18 years I have once seen a Border Patrol car, truck, SUV, whatever. At one time in 18 years. In 5 hours, I saw at least 4 of them the other day.
I thought you said that was the last one.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I'm just playing. I'm... So, and again, you know, everybody knows you take your faith quite seriously, and your ethnicity quite seriously, Betsy.
Yes.
And you are not leading question after another, but you're not put off by me using the term concentration camp.
I'm not.
Within your understanding of your own heritage. Does this bear a frightening similarity to what what the Jewish people and hopefully the rest of the world says, never again?
Yes.
Short of the showers and the gas chambers.
Yes. I mean, I think
that... And the ovens. I mean,
it's not on the same scale, and it's not millions of people, but it is definitely reminiscent.
But Donald Trump... But Donald Trump, and I say this recognizing what I was talking about in the first hour, because Trump, Donald Trump wants it to be on a scale of millions of people.
Yes, he does.
Okay, so here's where it gets a little complicated, Betsy. This is the Obama administration doing this.
Yes, it absolutely is.
I mean, this is not the state of Texas Department of Homeland Security.
No, this is the Obama administration.
Running concentration camps.
Yes.
At which people are detained indefinitely?
Until their hearing. There have been people there at least 2 years. There are children who don't know anything different.
Are there children who have been born there?
Yes. So the one family that's in sanctuary here, there's a woman in sanctuary at one church and a family in sanctuary at the other. And when I found out about him and what some of his needs were and the fact that I'm not working much this summer, I volunteered to do some math tutoring. And it turns out that his math skills are better than his English or better than his reading skills in any language. So I'm doing reading instead. I'm doing a little math and a lot of reading. Be that as it may, this kid was a year in detention and now 5 months in sanctuary. And that is his reality, because he's not allowed to leave the church except for school. His mother's not allowed to leave the church grounds at all.
And she
could only go to the fenced part of the grounds. He is growing up as a prisoner. He's 9 years old. This is his reality.
I'm not speaking for you, and I'm not speaking for me, but since this is being done as a function of official United States government policy, it is therefore being done in our name, and I guess we're supposed to be okay with this?
Presumably. I'm not.
And the presumable next president of the United States has said that, well, gosh, she sure is sorry about getting behind that whole prison industrial complex thingy, and she's sure, by golly, gee gosh, wow, going to do something about it when she's president. Have you heard any? Who knows about this? So they're not going to build this one in Dammit County, Texas, but that just means they're going to have to broker a deal in some other county, Texas, right?
Right. So they're not putting it there, in large part because there's not enough infrastructure, and because the guy who owns the land that they would be using was unprepared and a liar, and demonstrated as such at the hearing. That's why it's not going there.
But it'll go somewhere.
The next guy will be more prepared.
It'll go somewhere. So why Texas? I mean, why not New Mexico? Why not Arizona? Why not California?
I don't know. I know it's...
I mean, are there other similar facilities in New Mexico, Arizona, and California?
No, it's us and Pennsylvania. That's it.
Pennsylvania. So, wait. So, are they crossing the border in Texas?
Yes, and then they're being flown to Pennsylvania.
Damn. Where the process is identical.
I believe so, but I don't quote me on it.
And just out of curiosity, if you know, how does a person who may not have much in the way of English skills go about retaining a lawyer to advocate their case, since you've said it all depends on how good the lawyer is and what kind of judge you get?
A lot of them are assigned by the court.
And who, pray tell, is the court? Is it the United States District Court for the Southern District of Texas?
I believe it's the Immigration Court. I don't know what it's made of.
So it's not an Article III court.
I'm not a legal...
The judges student. In question are administrative law judges. They do not have constitutional authority.
Right. So the big point right now that's going on is that the purpose of the detention and the government dragging their feet on evaluating these cases is to discourage the kind of mass migration that was happening a year ago. So a year ago now, there were hundreds upon thousands of people appearing at the border saying, I'm from Guatemala.
I'm from Honduras.
I'm from Honduras. I need to request asylum. And the purpose of making conditions hard is to deter others, which is apparently not a legal defense.
I mean, you get administrative law judges, for instance, in, you know, Social Security cases. Those are administrative law judges. I'm flabbergasted.
It's pretty flabbergasting.
So when so these are people at the border. Are they also people, as you indicated, you know, somebody jaywalks and their papers are not in order, and the next thing you know, they're in a not a detention center?
Yes, I've had students get. I had a student shoplift. I believe he was 14, and he ended up in a detention center.
With guns.
Yes.
And guards.
Yes.
Barbed wire?
Yes. So one of the things that the guy told us was that there was no barbed wire, but then a whole group of us who were liberals, basically, drove out to the site. One of the county sheriff types gave us the address of where it was going to be, and we drove out there and took pictures, and there is indeed already barbed wire, and if it exists now, they're not taking it down. He also gave us permission to go on the grounds, and then his lackey showed up and refused to allow us access and told us we could take pictures from the outside.
But it's not going to happen there now, right?
Right. The place already exists. It was used as a workers' camp for oil workers.
With barbed wire?
Yes. Presumably to keep people out.
As opposed to keeping people in.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyway, it's been a social action kind of summer for me.
Kind of a conscience summer, wouldn't you say?
I would. I would.
Apart from you know, telling this story on this program, I mean, are there down there, you know, down there in Austin where you? I mean, are there articles in the newspaper all the time? Does the Dallas Morning News have constant coverage? The Austin American Statesman,
the Houston
Chronicle,
the San Antonio Express, more than the other two that you named.
And that probably goes for next to nothing in terms of having any effect, right?
I'm sure. There have been a couple of protests. Most of them were during the school year, and I didn't get a chance to go.
And so do you have any idea what the breakout is on how many get in and how many get sent back?
I have really not studied the statistics. I can't tell you.
Is that even discoverable?
I can ask.
Well, I mean, I'm wondering if that's, you know, national security, state secret, something like that.
I don't believe so. I believe that the numbers are part of FOIA. I believe the numbers are out there. I just don't know them.
But anyway, you slice it. If you get, okay, you say some people have been there for 2 years. Is that a lot of people in these camps?
I would say at least half have been there more than a year.
And I thought somewhere along the way, I mean, I've heard a little bit about these facilities, but I thought there was a stated policy of the Obama administration not to separate families.
That's not the case.
It's not the case that that's not the policy, or it's not the case that that's not happening?
That's not the practice.
I'll tell you what, that Obama, that's some liberal administration, isn't it?
I wish.
Would it be, I mean, do you suppose it would be worse under, I mean, granted, we had the influx of a year, 2 years ago, but there's always been asylum seekers. Did this go on during the Dim Leader administration?
I believe it started then.
And
I
Wow. Okay. Well, you've given us food for thought. If you get a, if you get any follow up on it, let us know, Betsy.
I have a San Antonio article that I'm going to send you.
Okay. Because it this sounds like the kind of thing. I remember, and I know, for instance, Mike Malloy has participated in the protest at the School for the Americas, which is where we teach death squads how to death squad.
Right.
Sounds to me like there needs to be, you know, a mass movement of people. Of course, you know, maybe people don't care. You know, they're with her.
Yeah. Well, actually, I just remembered there's one near Austin, but I haven't been there yet. There's one maybe 30, 40 minutes from Austin. This one was 3.5 hours away. We spent, I left my house at 6:15 in the morning and I got home at 7 in the evening. And they shut down proceedings at noon.
Wow.
Yeah, well, we managed to hit both rush hours on the way home. We avoided all rush hours on the way there. And hit both rush hours on the way home.
Well, Will in Chicago said, do let us know other details. I fear what Trump would do if he ran these concentration camps. And you know, I agree with Will, but it seems to me like there's plenty to fear if Hillary Clinton runs these concentration camps.
There is, because the precedent is set that this is how they're run. At one of the camps, it was so cold. And, of course, people are coming from warm climates, but they, on purpose, had the air conditioners set to freeze people out while the guards had sweatshirts. And for that one, the most we could do was do, you know, a jacket and blanket drive.
This is chilling. This is frightening. All those years that that right wingers have spent worrying about the Obama FEMA re-education centers, and they were convinced that Jade Helm was going to come and put the government's jackboots down on their freedom loving necks right next to their tattoos that said "Only God can judge me," and it turns out this is actually what's going on.
Right.
And I know you're in a hurry, but it goes without saying also that most of the people who are there as a direct and proximate result of American foreign policy in the first place, which just happens to be a foreign policy that was pursued and actualized by the most capable person ever to run for president in the history of the United States. Right?
That's how it seemed.
Wow.
I'm sorry I didn't have more actual details. More impression than facts and figures, I'm afraid.
Well, no, impressions matter, and there's plenty of facts in what you said, and there's enough to, well, there's enough facts there to make anybody with a conscience sort of start, you know, the power retching. Yeah. Well, thank you very kindly. I appreciate it, and I'll share any follow-up.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to go find that article from the San Antonio paper and send that to you.
Okay. Have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks. And wow. I mean, how do you put a pretty face on this? Gee, I wonder what Henry Kissinger thinks of these camps. Will in Chicago noting the details are chilling enough for Stephen King. Yeah. Steve writing from New York saying, is it me or is this a Pastor Niemöller moment? No, I don't think it's just you, Steve. Ron in the unflooded north kind of makes me wonder because you know, Canada has opened its wide, decent arms and embraced thousands of Syrian refugees. And I have yet to hear of any stories coming out of Canada of families being separated and kept under armed guard for years on end. Nope. I missed that. Good question, Stockton Larry in the chat room asking, how are those rent-a-cops dressed, brown shirts or full camo? You know, this sort of reminds me of the clip from Howard Dean that we had yesterday, where Alex Witt asked him about, you know, Loretta Lynch and the tarmac and Bill Clinton, and he said, why aren't we talking about jobs? Okay, Howard. Why aren't we talking about concentration camps in the United States? Why aren't we talking about who supports those concentration camps? I.e., almost every member of Congress, the President, all 8 members of the United States Supreme Court. Why aren't we talking about that? I mean, we're outraged, right? We're outraged that Donald Trump wants to round up 11 million undocumented immigrants and get them the hell out of here. Are we outraged that there are shattered families sitting in concentration camps in Texas and Pennsylvania? Is that just not outrageous because it's been done under Republican and Democrat alike? I mean, this is, after all, the greatest country in the history of the universe on earth, now, today, forever, under God. Amen. This side up. Reckon maybe we should be upset about concentration camps? And, you know, I don't give a damn what the the CEO of Corrections Corporation of America thinks of anybody calling it a concentration camp. Asa noting, refugee families ain't separated or kept under armed guard, but you best believe they's a plotting the total destruction and annihilation of the Canada. Damn straight. Kind of difficult to go do the goofy right wing stories after something like that, isn't it? The Titanic stories. Because see, yeah, as is often the case, almost anything that happens in Central America is directly traceable to something that has happened in the United States. The influx of undocumented immigrants from Mexico, NAFTA. It drove farmers who have been farming their land for thousands of years off their land and sent them here in search of the opportunity to swab toilets for sub-minimum wage and no workers' comp and no hope. Because Merca. Hey, I think I conjured Ron. What do you know, Ron?
You did. I'm doing fine.
So no Syrian concentration camps in Canada?
No, there's a couple of bad restaurants have opened up. That's been about the major downside. They even held a job fair here in Ottawa not very long ago for the 1,500 or so who ended up around Ottawa. And they had Arabic speakers there and all kinds of corporations showing up to talk about internships and co-op jobs for students, etc. It's pretty much business as normal.
And I mean, how do you expect not to have your Walmarts turn into masses of flaming, smoking rubble with an attitude like that?
Well, if that happened to Walmarts, would that be a bad thing?
Well, there's that.
Oh, that's changing the subject. Sorry.
Okay. How do you expect not to have all of your beloved Tim Horton donut shops turned into flaming, smoking heaps of rubble?
I'm sure Wendy's, who own Tim Hortons now, would be moderately upset. We'd probably declare war on the U.S. simply so we could then sue for peace and ask for terms. And could you give us a pipeline permit as well?
Yeah. I did just get a note from Steve in New York. He says, to be fair, my partner who lives in Ottawa has told me there are numerous reports of Syrian refugees in Canada wanting to go back to Syria because the situation has gotten so bad in some places.
It hasn't made the press. I haven't seen, possibly in Alberta, which is sort of the redneck capital, and possibly in Quebec, who eat everybody who's not French. But even that would be stretching the point. I haven't seen any reports of any just quiet beyond the usual, I guess, heartbreak, homesickness, etc., that anybody would have if all of a sudden they found themselves, going from refugee status in no man's land to a country where everybody speaks a totally different language, the culture is different, customs different, weather's different, education system is different, healthcare is different, everything is different. How can you not have some percentage of people that say they want to go home?
Well, that strikes me as incredibly reasonable.
I'm looking at a comparison to all the West Virginians and from Kentucky and sort of Western Virginia, what I call the hillbilly diaspora, who over the last 50, 60 years have all left to go somewhere, and they can't wait to get home.
Oh, no, we've talked about that. We pine. And that's within our own language group, within our own country.
Yeah,
that's, that was certainly...
Theoretically the same constitution. Yeah.
Right. Growing up, all my other friends, well, they went to the beach. We came back to the mountains. There you go. Meanwhile...
But to answer Steve in New York, I haven't heard of anything.
Okay. Meanwhile, though...
And trust me...
Go ahead. Yeah.
If it had happened up here, you can rest assured that the media would have been all over it. I mean, we've got media making a major kerfluffle because Black Lives Matter interrupted the friggin' Pride Parade in Toronto. And now Black Lives Matter are complaining because they've gotten threats and insulting emails because they interrupted the parade and insisted that the police float and all the dancing policemen have taken part in a Pride Parade in Toronto since day one should not be allowed to be part of the parade. So we got one group that regards themselves as a minority that's being impugned with great regularity, arguing that another group should be kicked out, maligned, etc. So it's an interesting conundrum. But in true Canadian fashion, they're arguing in the newspapers.
Yeah, it was done in true Canadian fashion. It was done without anybody getting a truncheon upside the head either.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Meanwhile, the same cannot necessarily be said for the United States, right?
I assume there's some examples that could be...
Well, I'm thinking particularly of Avon, Ohio. Which is apparently somewhere near Cleveland, where a fellow by the name of Ahmad Al-Minhali, a 41-year-old fellow, was at the front desk of a motel in Avon, Ohio. You know the story. You gave it to me.
Okay, I'll stop pretending I'm naive.
So, curiously, the story manages not to mention... Oh, no, it doesn't. It mentions it. Ahmad Al-Minhali was at the Fairfield Inn and Suites in Avon, Ohio. And at some point in time...
Part of the Marriott chain.
Is it? I thought Courtyard... Yeah, I guess it is, I guess. Courtyard by Marriott, and then Fairfield Inn and Suites.
Same group that run the Greenbrier.
Do tell.
Do tell.
But Mr. Al-Minhali was, I guess, at the desk, and one Alexis Silva was working as the desk clerk at the aforementioned Fairfield Inn and Suites. And Mr. Al-Minhali was speaking his native tongue, which, insofar as he is identified as being an Emirati, would be Arabic. Am I still okay?
Yes. You're doing just fine, Bob.
So Alexis Silva became distressed by Mr. Al-Minhali's use of the language, which was the first language he heard upon birth, and actually happens to be the language that he speaks, being as he is from that portion of this little blue-green time machine hurtling through space, to wit, the Persian Gulf region, where they don't speak the Queen's English. Well, actually, they do speak the Queen's English quite a lot, don't they?
They speak it much better than most Americans do.
Bingo. Well, but anyway, so the sister dials 911 and says, there's some kind of Arab in here, and I think he's pledging allegiance to the ISIS. Of course, my accent is all wrong. I don't do that Cleveland accent all that well.
Oh, I suspect she was probably from Kentucky, so you could do it.
Okay, so I'm spot on anyway. Well, Avon, Ohio's finest then descend in force upon the Fairfield Inn and Suites. This, by the way, is not the first time that somebody has been accused of pledging allegiance to ISIS. I think it happened on an airplane. It happened on an airplane in Oakland, California, if I recall correctly.
The claim was made that they were pledging allegiance to ISIS.
Yeah.
Because they were speaking Arabic.
The quote from the 911 call, and this is precious, is you can hear the sister of the clerk saying, "He's pledging his allegiance to ISIS or something. He's pledging his allegiance or something to ISIS." Now, I don't understand. Okay, so I understand if someone speaking Arabic says to me, "Salam alaikum."
Yep.
I understand. I understand alcohol, algebra. I understand guitar. I understand, Allah, Allah Akbar. I understand those to be Arabic words, and I hear them, and I recognize that it's Arabic, and I know what it means, but I couldn't parse it. I couldn't tell you what part of Assalamu Alaikum is the peace. Well, okay, that's the salam. But I can't tell you what's dative and what's the, in the accusative and what's, the subject. And I can't do it. I got nothing of Arabic. And I'm a long time knower of words in the English language. Right?
Yep. You have a leg up on motel clerks in Ohio, for the most part.
So what I'm wondering about Alexis Silva and her sister is what specialized degree of comprehension of the Arabic language they have that allowed Alexis Silva's sister to know that he was pledging his allegiance or something to ISIS.
Can I answer that?
Do, please.
She has the cumulative knowledge that's equivalent to the square root of sweet fuck all.
I was guessing that was probably the answer.
Nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
She heard funny talking. The guy could have been speaking French, but if he was wearing the long traditional white flowing robes and the headgear of his people, if he had asked in perfectly respectable Spanish for a room with two double beds, it would have come out in her ignorant, bigoted American mind as, what's the quote? Pledging his allegiance or something to ISIS. Right?
There was also the fact that, by one report, he had three cell phones. One of them must have been to detonate a bomb. Because apparently when he was standing at the desk, he got a call and he was pulling phones out and laying them on the desk. And I understand why he does that. Because when you travel a lot, you don't want to be constantly opening your phone up and swapping out SIM cards. So you have a phone in your pocket that's got a SIM card that's good for Europe and possibly England. You've got a phone in your pocket that's good if you're talking to someone in Asia. You've got a phone in your pocket for when you're talking to somebody in the Middle East. I know any number of people in the UAE who carry as many as four phones. And one of those must have been for a bomb, right?
Well, And here's the fun part, though. So I mentioned Assalamu Alaikum.
Yep.
Well, on the one hand, we have Gerald, who says, "I do believe she was using the swag method, otherwise known as the scientific wild-ass guess."
Wild-ass guess, yep. Thank you, Gerald.
But me, I can't help being all deductive-like.
Oh, you're going on the dark side, aren't you, Bob?
I live there. We have cookies. Let's say that again. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Yep.
Alaikum?
Yep.
More of an A than an I?
Yep.
Okay. Learn something every day. Assalamu alaikum.
Yep. Assalamu alaikum.
Which is Arabic for howdy. I mean, that's Arabic for howdy.
May the peace be with you.
Yeah.
And there's a more elaborate version, say, may the peace of the prophet be with you.
Isn't it interesting that they wish you well when they're saying hello, as opposed to in English we say goodbye, which means God be with you as you're going away.
Yeah. Yeah.
But never mind.
Here's your hat.
Don't be such a stranger. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. But no, the reason it's the sound. That's what Alexis Silva and her sister heard was S. The letter S in ignorant, bigoted, dumber than a handful of shit America, the letter S means ISIS if it's being uttered by a guy in the flowing robes. No, really.
Yeah.
So as noted, it becomes a 911 call. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa has noted. Brother Deacon Asa has said, too much Arab talk going on the horn. I'm a calling the popo. You were going to say?
Brother Asa may be the only other person here that frequents the horn that knows what the Corniche is.
Ooh.
So he's spent a lot of time in the area. But
so it gets
other
so
elements it, of this story.
So it gets worse. That's the first call to 911.
Yep.
So then Daddy gets into the act. Now, why is Daddy there at work with Alexis Silva? Maybe he owns the joint. I don't know.
He wasn't. He was at home, and sister called Daddy and goes something to the effect of, "This ISIS bomber here, we're all going to be killed," or words to that effect. I don't know the actual transcript. So Daddy calls the police, because he believes every word his daughter's told him.
Right. You know, including back when she said, no, really, I...
would.
No, really, really, Daddy, I haven't. That's right, Pumpkin. So Daddy gets on the phone, and Daddy calls 911. Why in the hell ain't you gone out there to help my precious Christian daughter? She's under attack from the ISIS. I mean, there's at least a passing chance that those are hillbillies up there, right?
Yeah.
So we'll make do with the accent.
And you've got a whole group of Barney Fifes who've just been itching for something like this to happen.
Well, I mean, they got all that riot gear and all their ISIS bullets and all of that. Because,
but contrary to proper standard reports, Bob, in the rumor mill, they do not dip those bullets in pork fat before they put them in their guns.
No, that's a filthy lie. They wrap them in bacon.
It are.
They wrap them in bacon. They got special war on terror guns where the rifling of the barrel is specially designed to accommodate bacon wrap bullets.
But yeah, we're kind of drifting off the point here. The cops got a call.
Yeah.
That they have to treat seriously. They show up. They take down a guy in a pristine white robe. I'm not sure how many guys are going to blow something up. Show up in a pristine white robe, standard gear, like they would wear to a business meeting. Don't bombers usually show up wearing really heavy vests filled with ball bearings and nails and
dynamite
like that? And,
I mean, dynamite's yeah, part C4, of it, right?
Whatever.
Yeah, C4.
Yeah.
I mean, now in America, let's be clear, it could be Tannerite, but somebody would have to shoot him or something to make it go off.
Yeah.
But yeah, the flowing robes, the majestic graciousness.
And I got called to some guys. ISIS is going to blow everything up. And I show up, and here's a guy in a absolutely whiter than white robe and minding his own business. I would go, hold on just a minute now. Could I have your, see your ID, sir? Could I see your passport, et cetera? I wouldn't show up and tackle the poor son of a bitch.
Which is exactly what happened.
And yeah, but why was he in Cleveland in the first place? I can assure you that is not number one on the list of tourist destinations for folks in the Emirates.
Well, but okay, let me take a little issue with you.
Okay.
If in fact we are in the Cleveland area, which my map tells me that we are, oh damn it, I didn't want to travel there. But it's right there, right near Cleveland. There are a goodly number of people from that neck of the woods who come over that way because they like to go and get some of the world's finest health care at a place called the Cleveland Clinic. Sometimes they give away Rolex watches to doctors and nurses. They really do. It's happened. The King of Jordan went there to more or less attempt a cure and then died. But yeah, that is
regarded as best of breed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a prime destination, which kind of makes this even worse. It's not like the Cleveland area is unfamiliar with people walking around who look like that, but America has been thrown into a fit of bowel clearing terror by something that has yet to even touch this country, to wit, ISIS violence. But of course, the entire Da Silva family, I imagine, Ron, has sat glued to the television, absolutely petrified, because they have been told time and again, especially by the for-profit media and on right-wing radio and TV, Fox News, etc., that the fella who shot up that gay bar pledged allegiance to ISIS. I pledge allegiance to the...
Yep.
How would you even know? But you're right. So the 5-0 shows up in force, throws the guy to the ground, handcuffs him, detains him, and you know, thank you, body cams, there's actually footage of all of this. Then they search him, and then they go, this guy's not a threat. Then they take the handcuffs off of him, and he collapses and winds up in the hospital.
Yeah.
There's kind of a punchline here. ABC News reached out to Avon Mayor Brian Jensen. And Avon Mayor Brian Jensen said, hold on. He was never arrested. Now, Ron.
Yeah, but getting slammed to the concrete's close enough, isn't it?
Well, wait, no. When the bracelets come out, when your liberty and you know, your average right winger, they get all, you know, they get all dewy over that word, liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. When your liberty is impeded by having handcuffs placed upon you, when you know that to take one step out of line is going to wind up with you being made a Swiss cheese, being filled up with 9mm sized, holes sufficient to make you a human Swiss cheese, you're under arrest. Well, I mean, we didn't read him his rights or nothing because we didn't have anybody who could read his rights in Arabian. But he wasn't arrested. We got to figure out a way through this, Ron, as a country. Because Avon Mayor Brian Jensen said, when you hear someone say he pledged allegiance to ISIS, that changes it. Then you find out that statement was never made, and it just kind of angers us. So what? I mean,
and what do you think the chances are that the De Silva sisters? I mean, it sounds like a burlesque act, but what do you think the chances are the De Silva sisters are going to get charged? Because if they don't get charged, dear old Avon is going to be on the hook for one hell of a lawsuit.
Well, I mean, but what are you going to charge him with? A violation of Ohio Criminal Code 99A, criminal dumbass?
Apparently, there are some statutes that would apply. I can't remember what they are at the moment, but filing a false complaint.
But that would have to be knowingly false. And I assure you that the Silva sisters were rock solid certain that he was a pledge and allegiance to the ISIS. They done heard it. They heard us in there somewhere.
How can you charge somebody for ignorance? Yeah.
But here's the thing.
But I did.
Go ahead.
I did check with my friend at the Canadian Embassy in Abu Dhabi today. And one of my friends there, if Fred's listening, you can't tell which one. And he said that the UAE government was absolutely livid. But because of the connections, based on oil, etc., long-time friendship, all they were doing was advising their citizens who were traveling outside of the UAE to Western countries to consider leaving their traditional dress at home. In other words, don't show up looking like an Arab.
Put on a pair of pants. This here's America.
Didn't mention the U.S. at all. Yeah. Didn't mention the U.S. at all, but they're just livid. I'm sure they're burning the back channels up, and the U.S. ambassador in the UAE is busy backing and filling and mending fences and...
Well, but what do you say if you're the U.S. ambassador to the UAE? What do you say? I mean, come on, we're a nation of idiots. What do you want?
Yeah. Well, the U.S. ambassador can't say that.
Oh, I bet he can.
So
we're a nation I'm sorry, Your Eminence. We're a nation of dipshits. We apologize.
I want to
backtrack just a minute here because I want to sort of sort one last thing out because it's sort of the genesis of this whole problem. Ron, you are now a 911 dispatcher. You're a 911 dispatcher in the general Cleveland area that includes Avon, Ohio. Are we good so far? So you get a call.
Theoretically.
So you get a call from a hysterical woman, and then you get a call from a hysterical man swearing that there's a guy in the Fairfield Inn and Suites pledging allegiance to ISIS. Now, I don't know what the job requirements are of 911 dispatcher in Avon, Ohio, I admit. But can we, I mean, if we just kind of go through this real slowly, like, can we sort a couple of things out? One, if he really is doing that, whatever he's going to do is going to happen probably in the next 30 seconds to a minute. And so whatever you do as a 911 dispatcher is probably going to wind up being palliative at best and not at all preventative. Are we in agreement?
I don't think so.
Okay. So when...
That's because we're reasonable people, Bob.
Well, we're trying to be, but we're trying to help too.
I have not heard the 911 tapes. I'm sure they will be made available under FIFA at some point. FIA, freedom. What's it called in the U.S.? Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah, FOIA. FOIA.
FOIA.
Yeah. So, but such being the case. Because it's clear to me, you know, maybe we'll get the audio, but it's clear to me here that the question was that was not asked was, ma'am, how do you know he's pledging allegiance to ISIS? Because there's not many answers that will result in you going, yeah, that's definitely the pledge of allegiance to ISIS. I mean, let's march through them. Well, there was an S in whatever he said. Hmm? Assalamu alaikum?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's wearing a white dress. Sorry, no. He has several cell phones. He's talking in a language I don't understand. Anyone, because I just counted them off on my little fingers here, any one of those four should result in the reasonable and prudent 911 dispatcher saying, well, ma'am, we'll get somebody over there. But then the dispatcher, getting back on the radio, says, somebody who doesn't understand Arabic says somebody wearing a white dress with several cell phones speaking Arabic is pledging allegiance to ISIS or something. Get a roller over there.
Approach with caution.
Yeah. You know, not send out the SWAT team. Not tell Barney to take his bullet out of his pocket. I mean, do you see my point?
Didn't you love the... Oh, yeah. But didn't you love the video of the police chief and the mayor apologizing to said gentleman, all in the hopes of preventing a kick-the-city-in-the-nuts lawsuit?
Oh, yeah. Or perhaps a revenge bombing. That's what they're thinking. Oh, shit, they are going to bomb us now. I mean, the photograph alone of the crew cut, big round faced, pasty faced, doughy police chief in his white shirt and his dark tie and his oddly enough not sheriff's star badge.
Yeah.
Just sitting there smiling. Oh, he's smiling. Oh, look, I'm smiling at you and you're an Arab. Oh, see, we're nice. But his face is redder than the table he's sitting at.
Probably because he's been told that if you don't make this go away, it's your job.
Yeah, because the mayor in his dark suit and corresponding dark tie is looking really unhappily serious.
Doer?
Even.
Yeah.
But, you know, we offer these little suggestions for 911 dispatchers because we are givers, and we've been trained to be givers by Carol Baker, giver in chief, who offered up when you mentioned the travel advisory going out to citizens of the UAE, inquired, should the USA issue travel warnings to Americans that all of the collective cleti shouldn't travel with their favorite sheep to the UAE, or drool, or refer to their father as Uncle Daddy, or admit that your wife is your sister? She notes, they have laws against sister fisters there, you know. And that they do. But no, this...
Or display your family tree as a stick.
Right, it's a stump. But that... You know, that's why I actually had this planned for the top of the Titanic Tuesday list. You know, until the great big humongous Hillary Clinton.
By a moment.
Well, until the great big humongous Hillary Clinton exoneration was announced. And see, I mean, I'm one of those weirdos who, did, you know, I've said all along there was no there, but nobody, but I keep getting these, yeah, but I mean, what about, and citing U.S., you know, U.S. code citations, and I'm going, no, guys, really, I mean, say what you will, the Department of Justice are a bunch of professionals, you know? I mean, they've got guys with a gram of rock cocaine in their pockets to prosecute. So there's that.
There's that. On that wonderful note of what I hope is not perceived as North American ignorance, I've been informed that, confirmed, I'm heading back to the sandbox in about a month.
Do not wear traditional American clothing, Ron.
Now, my rule number one this trip is don't get near any damn camels.
Do you really think it was a camel?
No more camel fever for me. Yep.
Well,
I do.
Eschew the camel.
So does my doctor.
No. Okay. No, rule one for you. Okay. So eschewing the camel, we're going to take as read.
Please do not throw it in the line, but sir. Usually the men ride the camel into town.
No.
I'm sorry. That's an old colonial British joke.
No, I get it. Yes. No, I was just simply going to suggest that you lay in a supply of white T-shirts with big red maple leaves on them.
You mean like the Canadian maple leaf I have on my little computer bag I carry?
Yes, I would put a Canadian great big flag. One on a T-shirt and wear that. I'd have that red maple leaf on the front and the back of my T-shirt.
You know, it's a standing joke, but in the 70s and 80s, particularly in the 70s, when there were so many Americans finding themselves and taking a year off university and traveling around the world backpacking, looking for peace and brotherhood and all that good stuff. An astonishing number of them had Canadian flags on their backpacks. And they got to be a standing joke with Canadians. And you'd hear some guy from Texas or Oklahoma who's got a Canadian flag on his backpack. Because Canadians were well respected around the world. Now, I don't know if that story ever got back to the U.S., but apparently it got back to the traveling community, and there were people all over the world that recognized the Canadian flag and just waited for us to say, we're sorry, we're nice people. If they showed up with the American flags, they got harassed, And that goes back 30, 40 years. So this is not a new phenomenon of Americans having to be cautious when they travel. And some of the people that you travel with, you watch them go through Heathrow or come through even Dubai, and they show up and know they're going to die. They're afraid of the damned airport in Dubai. So I'll have a little Canadian flag on my business, my briefcase, and that's as far as I'll go. But
I mean, do you travel like in a sport coat or a suit or anything? Or
Sport coat and jeans.
Yeah, so like a little maple leaf flat, lapel pin. I'm just trying to help here, Ron.
So I'm not the one that has to worry. Apparently, because the real focus of interest is on no-till motels in Ohio.
Because you're going to be treated like human being there.
Absolutely.
And why is that? Because one of the central tenets of Islam is that one of the biggest no-nos you can do that will make
Assalamu alaikum.
Right. And if you're not kind to a guest, Allah will pinch your little head off and play with it like a ping pong ball.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yep. I could be out in the desert and walk up to a strange house that I'd never been to. They didn't know me. I didn't know them. We couldn't speak the same language. And chances are I would be welcomed.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's part of the Bedouin culture. You try that in West Virginia. You'd probably be welcomed with some suspicion. Try that in parts of the South, and you'd be met at the door with a shotgun.
Literally.
And Lord help you if you were black.
You would be killed.
Yeah.
Because the news those stories exist. And they're real. On the other hand, things are not so shiny in the noble, majestic, royal, serene, gracious kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Did you catch that?
Yeah, not quite.
A couple of terrorist attacks in Medina.
Yep, and one in Jeddah. And I think there might even have been one in Riyadh. I'm not sure. But, yeah, ISIS is, the Sunni wing of ISIS is going after the mainline Sunnis in Saudi, and they're going after the Shia in eastern Saudi Arabia over near the Gulf. And the Brotherhood's not totally peaceful in Saudi Arabia.
No, they kind of have to keep their jackboots down on no small number of necks there, don't they?
Yep. There are innumerable pressures internally in Saudi Arabia. There's also the fact that besides having 4,000 princes and their families to support, there are they are the custodians of the two holiest shrines of Islam.
That they are.
And Medina. Iran is Muslim. Iran and Saudi Arabia don't get together, and you get this whole conflict of when, say, 500,000 Iranians decide this is my year to do the Hajj, and they show up in Iran and in Saudi Arabia, and they're not treated well. And last year, a few hundred of them died in a stampede. And then you get Iran accusing the Saudi Arabian government of incompetence, etc., not protecting the holy sites the way they should be. And you know, you got pee for distance contests going on multiple levels. Point being, nobody over there likes the Saudis. Nobody.
Because, as John Houseman once noted, they earned it.
I go back to the way they treat people. And when you talk to the expats who work there, regardless of whether they come from the UK, US, Canada, South Asia, any level you want to talk to in terms of expats, the two least favorite destinations to find work are Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. The most favorable is the UAE, and it's all because of the way they treat people. And I'm not sure what happened to the Saudis. I suspect it was politics and the ultra-conservative branch of Islam that got set up in Saudi and influenced the royal family and allowed them to get power back in the days of, you know, Lawrence of Arabia, which would have been in the 20s, I guess.
Well, actually, in the days of Lawrence of Arabia, he and the Brits were on the side of the, the current scion of that family is the King of Jordan. What became the royal house of Ibn Saud were a bunch of Ibn Come Latelys, who seized power.
But they came.
Who seized power by virtue of their desire for it.
Support of the Wahhabi.
And the fact that they told the Wahhabis they could do whatever they wanted. Yeah.
Yeah. And since then, the Wahhabis have. And they've spawned madrasas all over the world that preach hate and have spawned Al-Qaeda and you name it all around the world in Muslim countries. And I've talked to Saudis who know this is going on, will never acknowledge it in public, but they say their biggest threat is to any kind of a civilized government is any attempt to remove the Wahhabi influence from the inner circle. And in effect, that is a religious state controlled by the clerics, and they allow the Saud family to govern. And the Saud family know it. Otherwise, they'd have a revolt in the streets.
Well, see, in his Seven Pillars of Wisdom, T.E. Lawrence talks about Wahhabism, and he talks about what uncivilized, barbarous religious thugs they are. And back then, his take on it was that it rises up every so often, and then, as he put it, it crashes on the shores of modernity. And with the rise of the royal house of Ibn Saud, somehow they prevented that crash from taking place. Mainly, you know, they have the trappings of modernity, but they have the medievalism of the Wahhabist sect.
The power to enforce it.
Because a great number of subjects of the royal, majestic, noble, graciousness house of Ibn Saud would just as soon live their lives, as opposed to having a bunch of, you know, royal, majestic, noble, gracious, sister-fister police, stick them in jail because there wasn't a guy with the little woman when she went out to buy bread.
Yeah. Or drive a car. Or any number of other things.
Or, you know, vote. That was grudgingly done.
Yeah. I think it was some withholding done to accomplish that.
You mean a la the Lysistrata?
Don't get near me with that thing. Mm-mm. Not tonight.
Nope.
Not this afternoon. Nope. Nope. And when you hear that 20 or 30 times around the entire family.
From four different women. From.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Ohio.
Yes.
Acknowledging that the root of this was, has to be ignorance first, bigotry second, the actions of the police were less than stellar. The poor guy who got accosted is totally within his rights to be royally pissed and should be suing everybody left, right, and center.
One hopes he does.
Does that put it in a nutshell?
Yeah, it does. And one figures that the insurance carrier has already been in contact with the said mayor and the said police chief. Said, boys, we're writing a check. We are not going to court with this. Which should kind of
probably
which
why
should,
we saw the yeah. If you make it go away, it doesn't fix the problem. If you get it in court and you get to name names and get things on record, I'm not sure the insurance company, if he's sufficiently pissed and he has the stamina for it, I'm pretty sure he doesn't need the money from the city of Avon. B, I'm pretty sure he can afford some damn fine lawyers. And C, he can look the insurance company in the eye and say, okay, bye, boys. We're going to do this because he doesn't need the money.
Wait. You're leaving out a step. He's not going to try the case himself. There's going to be a lawyer involved. And he might need the need the money, but the lawyer does. And the lawyer will look at him and say, you're a great guy. They put $1 million on the table. Take $1 million, because here, let me explain the situation to you.
I get my 25%.
Well, no, let me explain the situation to you.
I'm sorry.
I don't care how in the wrong they were. And even if we put you in a Brooks Brothers suit, that jury is going to be made up of the same kind of ignorant bigots that started this in the first place. And you may walk away with a goose egg. You'll probably walk away with a goose egg. And everything they did to you will have been vindicated. How's that?
I would look you in the eye if you were my lawyer and point out the fact I don't need the money. I want them to squirm. I'll pay your fee and we will take this to court. And I'll make certain that the press is there, which he could do easily. And you've got shit tons of embarrassment coming down on the entire community and that part of Ohio by extension.
And what happens when the lawyer then kindly explains, and this also means that they will get to do it again to somebody who isn't you and the next guy they might kill?
I would find a different lawyer.
But, I mean, that's not lawyering. That's reality. That's America. You know, and one of the things that must be borne in mind about our relationship with the Middle East and our relationship with Islam is that, you know, one of the reasons Thomas Jefferson had one of the first copies of the Quran ever brought into the United States was because he actually found some things to be sympathetic to in it. We've talked in the past about the revolution that was led in Algeria in the 19th century that was followed and respected and revered because the Bedouin people of that area were rising up against their French colonial overlords. It has not.
I heard another theory about why Jefferson got a Koran, and I've never dug into it. It was because there apparently was a belief at the time that the Moors, who were Muslim, were one of the key sources of the Enlightenment, which pulled Europe out of the Dark Ages. And he wanted to read as much as he could in terms of literature from that period to see what they had brought to the table that might have made this happen. I mean, besides science and math and astronomy and a bunch of other stuff and chess, they were apparently, even then, had a very enlightened view on how you should treat your neighbors and your fellow man.
Right.
And he wanted to better understand that.
Yeah, like I said, he had a certain affinity for what was going on there. Now, later on, you know, he has a problem with the Barbary pirates during his presidency, but that wasn't even seen as a Muslim problem. That was seen as a piracy problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
And insofar as this hemisphere had its own problem with pirates and privateers running up and down the east coast of North America and down into the Caribbean, it was understandable in that light. But Islam has not always been despised in this country. It has been, in fact, respected and revered.
No.
In large part, it's,
I don't think it's really...
Well, it goes back to the Arab with the Arab oil embargo of the 70s. Everything begins to change toward a negative impression. And hey, look, the Arab oil embargo, we've got the Saudis to thank for that too.
We do, don't we? Yeah.
Isn't it funny how that works?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm going to bail out here. Once again, I called in with not much to say and no particular direction to go in. Here we are over an hour later, and apparently we've covered some distance, and hopefully we've entertained a few people. I've learned some things. I'm going to leave you to the grace of your contributors for the rest of the evening.
Interesting you should bring that up.
All you contributors, contribute.
You want to say that
I'm
again?
Sorry, Bob?
You want to say that again? I over-talked you.
Listen. Listen up, all you contributors. Contribute. Good night.
Good night, Ron. Talk to you soon. Our buddy Ron in the blissfully unflooded, non-tornadic north. And he's right, and I didn't have a chance earlier to thank Glenn. And to thank Steve, Karen, and Cletus. We started the program needing to raise $340. We now need to raise only $300.45 because people like to hear me do the ciphering on the air. $300.45 to go on the evening. It'd be nice to take a chunk out of that so that we don't have $500.45 to raise tomorrow evening. That having been said, that's where it stands. And thank you very kindly to Glenn and to Steve, Karen, and Cletus. $300.45. And y'all can do the various permutations of that as needed. Meanwhile, Steve in New York says, in regard to Avon, Ohio, says, I wish the guy could sue. However, and I don't like this, but the court would dismiss it because this has the good faith defense written all over it. I don't like it, but that's what it is. At least that's how I see it. And what Steve is alluding to is that the police
regardless of what they did, acted in good faith. And that has become, in constitutional law in the United States, a sort of whitewash, if you will, for all manner of police misconduct. Well, he was acting in good faith. One last thing about the Hillary business. For those of you who are aggrieved by the decision, what you wanted next was for a grand jury to be impaneled. And you know what? An attorney general exercising her professional discretion might have said, if grand juries were really what they are supposed to be, that is a neutral fact-finding body, might have said, listen, let's send it to the grand jury and let the grand jury decide. But grand juries are not neutral fact-finding bodies, now are they? I think we learned that with Trayvon Martin. I think we learned that with Michael Brown. I think we learned that with Eric Garner. I think we learned that with Tamir Rice. Grand juries are merely tools of a prosecutor. And if a prosecutor didn't have the stomach, if the investigator doesn't have the stomach, the prosecutor won't have the stomach for the prosecution. And the grand jury, well, forget it. And that kind of goes hand in hand with what Steve just said about the chances of a lawsuit in Avon, Ohio. My apologies. To those listening live, people listening to the podcast, it's meaningless because no time was lost. But for those listening live, my apologies for the interruption for the streamer going south. I did hear back from Ben Birch, and Ben didn't actually do anything to make the streamer come back. As Ben said to me, that's just internet weather. So there you go. Under the subject line, ain't no philosophy left, the following. I find it fascinating and more than a little creepy how easy this reasonable talk of ours, this measured and rational tone of our collective concern for those unfortunate enough to seek asylum in our fair countries of the developed or civilized world. Just what sort of salvation do we seek when we lazily contemplate this or that need or deprivation of the latest privileged or marked group, our convenient burden, I guess, its wants, terrors, its legitimate claims to life or happiness? Perhaps survival. I'm always amazed, really, at how seamlessly the average person moves from a reasoned argument, which perspective is that of the individual actor or agent, only to subvert the purpose of communication by immediately taking the position of the group, the political entity, this or that tribe or clan or collective, best serving the complaint or grievance as such. It is an unconscious mode or habit. It eludes the educated as the rude, the conservative as the progressive, the poetic personality as the practical one. Here's the rub. Times certainly are tough. Jobs are scarce. Security is problematic. He can't build enough walls, stick enough thumbs in the ones already built, it seems. But the stakes have changed. We, the outgoing generation, protest or identify or mollify as much as we wish. We can't comprehend, much less justify, a world which no longer has any real provision, any need for the vast bulk of humanity now living on this planet. Whole boatloads of truth in that statement. We are commodity, singular. In the advanced cultures, we are more and worse. We have been rendered artificial personalities, false consumers of entirely predetermined choices. From toothpaste to animal protein, from energy sources to political players, there's only the engineering of collective behavior. What happened, one wonders, to all the meaningful work? We have complained of these matters, the inhumanity of post-industrial processes of capitalism, for longer than the collective memory can remember. The romantic poets were bitching about the same things. The truth somehow has become insane. Alienated labor, wage slavery, impersonal processes of production, class warfare, how terribly quaint. What has really changed? We inhabit a planet of instant possibility. Travel, communication, plague, they run furiously, permeate all places and times and perceptions. In the blink of an eye, yet the world suffers, the babies starve, the bullets fly. Nothing changes, not really. We, the privileged, are 1 or 2 days removed from murdering our friends and neighbors. Take a man's plate of beef and then his bread and his last cup of water and watch the rivers of blood flow in the streets. How comfortable, how retired, how well stocked you must you be to talk of this world and its endless woes. The walls already in place, the walls to be built, the prisons, the detention centers, these are holding pens for slaves, slaves of us, the builders of the monsters. If you are old enough to be dumbfounded, perhaps it is because you are the architect of the thing itself. It is almost impossible to tell someone much younger than you, to tell her that the computer in her hand, the instant information at her fingertips, was something given life, come to pass in the psychedelic hangover of a weird trip, a momentary envisioning of that impossible to envision. Something akin to the romantic symbol, the interior meaning of the poem, but now there are just too many bodies in the world, a mountain of idle flesh, hungering, moving, being. There are not enough bones of all the dead in the earth to counter this mass of desperate humanity. If emotion arguably is a forgetting to remember, perhaps memory is a forgetting to forget. Regards, Steve, in China. I don't know. How do you explain to that young person that that amazing little device in her hand is the product of slaves, sometimes not much older than her, who stand for 12 hours a day, who work for next to nothing, and for whom, when we come right down to it, we go, yeah, but I mean, you know, they all do it, so, and we all got to have one. How indeed. Hey, look, it's Jules. Let's talk to Jules. Hey, Jules. Oh, Jules. I know the Skype is working. I know I've got the right button up. I know nothing is disconnected. Jules. Well, darn. Maybe Jules's Skype isn't working. Well, the purpose of Jules' call was to remind you that tomorrow, from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, her program, with its new name, Morning Jules. Ah, see what she did there? On FYINation.com will be airing. FYINation.com. FYINation.com/listen for the chat room. Help yourself. I have a feeling you'll enjoy the conversation. I have a feeling you will enjoy it immensely. When time permits, maybe, well, I'll try to wander over and carry on some conversation there. So, I don't know why we didn't have...
Hey, here we go.
Well, there she is. I just got done plugging the program, Jules. But welcome. Okay, here we go. And there she went. But tomorrow, 10 a.m., FYINation.com, chat at FYINation.com/listen. Can you do that? Sure. And you'll enjoy it, too. So it's time to get out of here. Malloy's next over in Malloyville. I'll be checking it out. You check it out. And thanks, everybody, for joining in. Remember, between now and tomorrow's program, $300.45 to raise. So there we go. Thanks to all of everyone. Thanks to this entire community for the community you have created. Thanks to everybody who financially supports the program to keep it going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.